Episode 7 of B2B, the Business Club podcast. Delighted to welcome Jonathan Mills today. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm good. Yeah, it's funny walking in and sort of realising how close we'd been in the past. So share some stories and friends and interesting conversations to be had, I'm sure.
Yeah, so on that, so obviously you went to school at CTC Kingshurst. We went to school at Archibald Grimshaw, same time. So yeah, very small world. So we'll get into that shortly. We'll get into discuss your businesses, how they came about, how you ended up doing what you do. Firstly though, if you could just give us a little 5-minute introduction, who you are, that'd be wonderful.
Five minutes.
2 minutes.
Who am I or what do I do? I guess they're two different things. So grew up in, I was born in Marston Green in Birmingham. I sort of grew up in Coleshill, moved out to the Sticks, and then sort of through my latter years went to CTC next to you fellows at Grimshaw. I lived out in the little sort of country village, so being in that, in and around that area was actually a baptism of fire, because CTC had a cohort that sort of spread across the whole of Birmingham, so you had a real mixture of sort of characters, and that was definitely a good move for me, because it just meant I was a little bit more streetwise than a lot of the kids that grew up in my village. CTC, the journey from there was football. I mean, we were football mad, we were strong as well, and we were having a bit of banter off camera there, weren't we, about our sort of past head-to-head. Went and signed for Cambridge United as an apprentice.
Was that straight from school? Were you scouted during school?
So when I was younger, like I say, we were part of a strong sort of setup. We had a good Sunday league team and all that type of stuff. And I was with clubs from when I was about 10. Derby, Derby, Stoke, Forest. Got released from Derby, then signed for Cambridge United. I had a couple of different options, all sort of lower clubs, but Cambridge sort of stood out for me as the best option. So went to Cambridge. Didn't quite work out there. Sure, we'll come back onto that. The guy that owned Premier Soccer at the time was my youth team manager, and he got sacked. One thing led to another. I got released, and then he'd set up Premier Soccer, and you know, my relationship with him was strong, so I went and jumped in and started doing summer soccer schools and stuff like that, and then I don't think I was even 18, and basically I set my own business up under that banner, and the rest is history really. It just kind of took off from there in that sense. Played football, played non-league for, so it brings it back here, actually, coming back to this place. Played non-league, played quite a lot down south. Some good stories, some good success. Just kind of evolved got into some property stuff. Last 4 or 5 years have been more focused on sort of business coaching, investing in that type of stuff, really.
So that's a very early age to be setting up a business and getting into business. So where did that business acumen come from at such an early age? Obviously not a lot of people at that age are thinking of businesses, setting up businesses and corporate, everything that comes is set up a small business. How did that come around for you?
I think, I was lucky in many ways that the guy that set Premier Education up, he was very sort of forward thinking, but he was also, one of the things that made him successful is the fact that he just trusted people. You know, he put people into opportunities when actually they probably shouldn't have had those opportunities. But I think I always had it in me, really. I mean, I'm pretty sort of driven and pretty intense. So I think it was just quite natural. And being at Cambridge back in the day, I mean, you know, we were a lower league team, and you had to stand up and be strong, otherwise you'd just get eaten alive. I mean, it was a brutal environment. I mean, football clubs wouldn't get away with it now.
What position did you play at Cambridge?
Left back, right back, centre mid. Bit of an all rounder, really. Yeah, it's a bit of an all rounder.
So you went there as essentially a youth, playing defence, central midfield against teams of that ilk. Yeah, so I assume that was quite a quick growing up. Yeah, that's the far period for you.
Yeah, I think my debut for the youth team, we played Arsenal. I mean, literally didn't touch the ball the whole game. When I look back on the team sheet, I mean, there was some real players in there. So we played in what was called South East Counties League. So I think it was us and Gillingham were the, you know, were the outliers. Everyone else was like Tottenham, West Ham, Arsenal, all the top clubs. So, Arsenal have got a team of French players, you know, playing against a team of lads that probably most of us have been released from higher level teams. But
yeah,
so it's a bit of a mismatch, to be honest.
Yeah. So obviously 2 years there.
Yeah.
How did that kind of end? What was the moment where you kind of thought, this isn't really for me, or, you know, I'm going to move on and do this?
Well, it wasn't my choice, to be honest. I my first year I did really well, and then playing reserves, I was in and around the first team squad. I don't think my face fit, because I was a little bit fiery, and I had a... had an incident with another player who actually broke my nose. He was a pro, and he headbutted me. So that put me out for about 2.5 months. But not only that, but it kind of just gave me this rep as a bit of a thorn in the side of some people. I don't think that did me any favours. So I just lost a bit of momentum then, and then didn't quite work out.
Okay, well, you still got further 98% of the rest of the summer trying to make it, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's an amazing experience. I think looking back, it's more about the experience and what I learned in that journey, moving away from when I was 16 and living in a house of 25 lads, and sort of seeing success. I mean, we had a really good first team then. They got promoted. They got promoted that season. You know, smashed everybody. Really good FA Cup run. So it was really good to see that. Like I say, being exposed to that environment was, I mean, like every Monday after a home game, we would sweep the whole stand. So, you know, that was one of your jobs, you're cleaning boots.
And that's gone now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all gone as far as I'm aware. And it just such a good ground. I mean, we would walk to the ground, it'd be like a half an hour walk. You'd then clean boots, you'd then go training, you'd come back, you'd have lunch, you know, you'd clean boots again, you'd... you know, go and do a bit of extra practice, then you'd go and train in the afternoon, and then you'd walk home. You know, that was your day.
It's a work ethic, isn't it?
Yeah,
still
yeah.
In youth flies at that time, I don't think it's the case these days.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so on to the business then. So you're 18, 19, you're employing 7 staff, delivering to 50 schools. How did you find that workload?
Well, initially it was just kind of me, so that was kind of later on down the line. But I was looking back, I was quite fortunate in that where my business was in Bedford. So I lived in Milton Keynes, used to travel into Bedford, and Bedford had a university that had students studying to become teachers. So it was this sort of weird opportunity where actually a lot of the coaches I had were really skilled and really a lot of football. So I just had the pick of the bunch. So initially it was all part-time work. But honestly, coaches that were better than me and were more experienced. So it was quite easy to do it, really. It just grew. I think I was quite relentless in the way I operated. I was very naive, but like a helpful naivety where you just kind of do things without really sort of thinking about the consequences. And there wasn't that much going on in that sort of, I mean, now, you know, every man and his dog is a sports coach doing holiday camps, whereas then it wasn't such a thing really.
Yeah.
And then it quickly evolved. We went, the business went from football to sport, and now we do kind of like wraparound care and sort of everything related to education in the primary sector. I mean, the business itself is within a franchise network. So my business was effectively the first franchise. I mean, it's where it is now compared to then. It's just, you know, it's like chalk and cheese. It's light years ahead of where it was back in the day.
How did that? So when about was that? 2005. That's when you initially sold the business.
So I had the first franchise was in. Was in Bedford. I had an opportunity to sell that. I'd actually moved. I went to the States for 4 months, and my plan was to sort of work and bum around and then go and travel the rest of the world. So I kept my business till then. And then when I got back from America, I sold that and just quickly got a bit restless, and I ended up buying another franchise, which I bought in East London because the Olympics was coming.
Yeah,
I can't remember the exact dates, but so I bought that with a friend of mine, and the idea there was that I wouldn't, because it was away from where I live. I mean, it's a 5-hour journey on a bad day. It would force me to kind of build a team without having the business reliant on me. So I did that, and then as part of, well, at the same time, I was working for the franchisor on a consultancy basis, recruiting franchisees into the business and training them as well. So well, it worked really well. Did work well.
And how did you find the whole sale and acquisition process at that age?
Yeah, I mean, it was a nominal amount. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a life changing figure. You know, what it did is it effectively allowed me to get into the property game. It gave me enough cash to be able to do that. And honestly, I can't really remember, but it was pretty simple. I mean, how we do it now is a lot more complex than what it was at the time, but it worked.
So in regards to the property business, so is it right that you kind of, it was a right place at the right time, kind of happy accident with the actual acquisition that you made that kind of kicked you on there?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was a little bit dodgy, if I'm honest. Not on our part, but what happened was I started to look at property and had the opportunity to, first property we bought was like a bit of a wreck down south. And we sort of stumbled across that, took a bit of a gamble, and ended up making a chunk of cash. It was about 65 grand, I think it was. So it was, you know, it was a good amount of money, but not a life-changing amount. And what happened was we were looking at, what we wanted to do was to get this pot and then to just move that pot and just keep it moving. And what we'd sort of realized was a lot of the time you'll get some money, you'll get an investment pot, you'll put it into a property, and it's then hard to keep that money moving.
Yeah.
Friend, my best pal, he was at Cambridge with me. He grew up in Grimsby, and he sort of suggested that we look there because you can still buy houses for 50 grand. So we started looking. We were sort of having a bit of success. And I remember we had a conversation with an agent and said, look, interested in buying this property, and I don't know why, but the agent just said, look, you don't want to buy this property because off the back of the property is basically an alleyway, and everyone goes out on a Friday night, and then inevitably, you know, they come out and they have come out the back of the club and they'll have a wee and all that. And it was like, oh, okay. And he said, but I know this guy who I'm going to connect you with, and he'll take you under his wing. And it was like, great. So I just rang this guy and I just said, look, I've been given your number. You know, this is what I want to do. Can I come and see you? And that's how it started. So I went to see him. He basically got in his car. We drove around Grimsby and Cleethorpes, and he pointed all the streets at. He's like, that's a bad street. You don't buy there. This is okay. That's a good street, but don't buy at that end. And he had an agency himself, but he was old school. I mean, old school landlord, good guy, but old school. And we just got in with him and he helped us, took us under his wing. And with his agency, he basically had enough, he'd had enough of it. And he offered it to us. And what the deal was, is, I don't know if you remember, but back in the day, you had to, all deposits, or they do now, they have to be protected. And he'd not all of them were protected. So the deal was that he passed us all of the landlords and the tenants, and we would essentially tidy all that up. So we managed to acquire, you know, reasonable amount of landlords and tenants, and that then helped us to form what was New Mills Properties.
So on another day, yeah, could have been you drove up, you looked at those properties, you bought those properties, and it was a disaster.
Yeah, exactly.
That's definitely right place at the right time. It's funny how these things come around, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's also asking questions, and you know, generally people want to help. Yeah, and I think if you put it out there and you're open to that, I think people will, you know, people will generally give you a leg up and they will help you along. So I mean, this guy was, he was a guru without even knowing it. I mean, you wouldn't see him on social media, you wouldn't know who he is, but I mean, he as a character, I mean, his story is amazing as well. I'm really grateful for his support.
We were saying this in the previous podcast, weren't we? How the old school, the older generation, that's what's, as they're kind of retiring off now in the various industries, that experience has been lost.
Yes.
It's not being replaced.
Yeah.
And it's an issue in construction. But yeah, like you say, people that aren't on social medias, that aren't interested in that side of it.
Yeah.
It's a shame that those people are kind of moving away without always passing that down, passing the torch on, the experience on. Did you find any issues around that time? Would that have been with the 2008 crisis? Would that have kind of impacted you around that time?
So we first property we bought was 2009, so we benefited from the downturn. We were talking off camera and just saying that, you know, my experience is that anytime there's sort of challenges in the economy or there's wars, you know, that's the time when you want to be getting stuck in. You know, even if you're tentative and scared about it, it's like that's when you need to be doing it. So we benefited from that. And there was a period where I can't remember what it exactly was, but we bought sort of three or four properties pretty quickly, and we got them at, you know, reasonable values. So
yeah, because your turnaround with the actual properties, was it 50 to 200 in 3 years?
On the property,
on the actual scale of properties that you were on.
Yeah, so there's two things we did. So I've got, myself and my business partner have got an agency. We had an agency which he still runs. So that's New Mills Properties.
Yeah.
But on the side, we also bought properties together and still do. So with the agency, that's accurate. So that what we basically did is acquired those original tenants that were part of that. That sort of dodgy deal, and then we sort of quickly evolved and bought our own, you know, got our own more tenants and landlords on board.
And how do you find that as a general thing in regards to managing? Obviously, it's quite problematic when I speak to people that do small scale property to let. How do you find tenants, landlords, the whole management of that?
Well, back in the day, the quality of tenants we had then was nowhere near where it is now. And I mean that with the greatest respect. But I think it's a really tough industry to be in, and you have to be like thick-skinned, and you have to understand the shit that comes with being a landlord. But again, that is the opportunity. Like, if you know that, you know that. I mean, we've had... We were chatting on another podcast last week. So we've had prostitution, we've had drugs, I've had two fires, we've had a fire that was front page of the Grimsby Telegraph. You know, we've had multiple theft, houses trashed. Like, it's just part of the game. And I think as soon as you understand that, like, that's the difference between getting involved and being successful or not.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit like being a football manager, isn't it? You're going to get sacked. You're never going to keep your job forever. So as soon as you get that, it's like, well, okay, I get it.
So do you always, with the businesses that you're involved in, obviously, again, you're very business-minded, are you always looking at business with a five-year strategy, an exit strategy?
Not really. I mean, well, clearly not, because the education, I've been doing that for 25 years now. So, no. I mean, properties, for me, is all about just holding on to that. The New Mills properties, like, my business partner bought me out of that. That was about 4 years ago now. But in terms of buying property, we're still buying property together as a pair. But not really. I think properties is something that, for me, I never want to get rid of. I always want to keep it. I think the value is in holding it rather than necessarily sort of buying and trading with it. Just because it's just too expensive to do that.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you have an opinion on, there was an explosion in TikTok and social media, buy to let, acquire as one, and then all of a sudden, with the interest rates and inflation, they've gone very quiet because they were telling every man and his dog, weren't they, do this type of compound interest from the first house, bring it to the second house, basically telling everyone on the internet how to become a millionaire in 5 years' time. They've now disappeared quite quickly.
I think the thing with any sort of property investment business, there's so much information out there. I put a video together yesterday to put out on socials myself, and I think the key is that if you want to be successful at anything, property, wealth, health, business, like, all of the information you need is the click of a button. And I think the key thing really is to, like, decipher what is right for you. And I've been guilty of it myself, where, you know, back in the day, I would have, you know, been encouraging people to well, you should do that and you should do this. And it's like, well, do you know what? Like, this is what I do, and this is why I do it, and this is how I do it. But, you know, take what feels right for you from that, and then just discard the rest. And I think that's a key thing to be able to do in this day and age. You know, is just to sort of feel all the information, but just do what feels right for you.
I suppose that's in your business coaching, something you push. How did you find that was something that came natural to you, that you progressed to? How did you just one day say, right, I'm going to pass this information, I think I've done enough, I've got enough skin in the game now that I can now pass this information to others?
Well, I've always been one of those people that's been quite forthright, rightly or wrongly, in kind of giving my opinion. Not so much these days, I'm a bit more discreet, a bit more calculated, but that's always been in me. You know, playing football, I was always sort of captain or, you know, head boy and that type of stuff. And so it's just sort of part of what I do. But I think naturally when you have some success, or what's perceived as success, I think people will pick the phone up, and I think they will reach out to you because they see what you have, and they want a piece of that. So I think it was a natural evolution that actually, if I'm going to do this, then, you know, people should be paying for my time.
Yeah. So that takes us on then to Ascend 360, which, again, doing what we do, which is a small business podcast, Birmingham businesses, looks like a wonderful initiative. So you are essentially teaching sole traders how to adapt and to become small business owners and all the trappings of that.
Yeah.
How did that come about? And
yeah, just to, I mean, Ascend 360 is no longer there because, and that's now Alchemy Help, which is my new business. So Ascend 360 was a partnership with a friend of mine. And that was just born, I think it was in COVID or maybe just before, but that was just born from the work that he was doing. He had sort of small mastermind groups, and I liked his sort of energy and vibe, and I could see some potential correlation. So we just started talking, and then we had a bit of an idea. It's like, you know what, we'll run with this. In retrospect, I think that was never really gonna work, because what we tried to do was to sort of amalgamate business and personal stuff, and there wasn't a clear enough message around actually this is what we're focused on. And the two of us as a partnership were not quite right. It just didn't sort of work. But what it did do is it gave me it gave me a stepping stone to kind of understand what does and doesn't work so that I can then relaunch and go again in with my own stuff.
And how do you find that?
Love it. Yeah, I absolutely love it. It's challenging, but quite often I'm sitting in with business owners and I'm just in my flow. I'm in my flow. Absolutely love it. And I've had I had a big win with a client of mine who we've taken from being a sole trader. So he was a one man band driving all around the country, working his ass off, stressed. He's basically on the cusp of doing a big deal to exit that business with a good chunk of money to sort of change his life. So like when you see, when you're involved in things like that, and in particular with him, he's a really good guy. Yeah, it's really rewarding, really rewarding.
Do you find with dealing with small businesses, something I've found certainly since COVID is the banks, so there was the furlough money, wasn't there? There was the bounce back loans. There was the £1 billion worth of fraud around that. I think our experience is the banks, I think maybe had the fingers burnt a little bit. Finance now through the banks for small businesses is quite challenging, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know what your experience of that is.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because we were talking about whenever there's fear, whenever there's something going on in the world, whether that's wars or like inflation, yeah, all that type of stuff, it's just opportunity. And it sounds a bit ruthless in the sense of like, well, why would you take advantage of that? But the reality is if you don't, then you're missing an opportunity to level your business up, employ more people, create more jobs, make more money, help your community. So so we during the COVID period, we definitely leveled up from a property perspective. Ironically, the property market in the area we were operating in was buoyant at the time, and a lot of property was selling for more than what it was actually worth. But we managed, I think we bought sort of three or four units during maybe a 9-month period. And then in terms of my education business, I think there was I was very cautious around the whole furlough thing, and we were really diligent in making sure that we did everything right and we sort of did it by the books, because what's happening now, people are, it's coming back to bite people. So like little things like, we topped everybody up, for example, even people on furlough who weren't working, we still topped them up. And I think that was helpful. But one of the key pieces of work I did was to, I spent about 2 days, I remember sitting in my garden, because it was really good weather, wasn't it? It was sitting in my garden and researching around the C-bills and the funding. And what the banks had actually done is that they were encouraging people to take C-bills loan. And the criteria, and I double-checked this, was the C-bills loan was actually there as well to help people to grow. So it wasn't just something to protect, from COVID and the aftermath of that, but it was an opportunity to grow. So I got quite a chunk of money from the C-bills loan, and that was transformative for us because it just allowed us to do sort of lots of stuff moving forward and keep that business on.
Yeah.
But it's hard work to get it, but worth the time to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I know someone that actually went from renting a unit to they use that to mortgage, essentially as a mortgage on a lower interest rate to get a property of their own and become a landlord.
Absolutely.
For their own business. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely positive for some. And of course, like the scaffolders and people like that were putting imaginary people on the payroll and paying them furlough for a year and a half, which is where we find ourselves with a big debt now, isn't it? But
yeah,
it's a different story.
I think there's a balance, isn't there, between, I think it's all to do with values, isn't it? I mean, as much as I'm sure you can manipulate things and you could have piled into that, I would struggle to actually do that knowing that it would come back in the future and bite everyone on the arse. That's the reality of it.
That's the real, the bloke side, that is the reality now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the position we find ourselves in economically. So a little bit off kilter. So was a as a company that trains school children, what is the reality of the obesity crisis in kids?
You can see it, can't you? I mean, it's evident. I think the challenge we face in this country is that sport is still at the bottom of the pile for schools. You know, they're under so much pressure to deliver on, you know, numeracy and literacy and all that type of thing that actually, you know, it is still not a priority for them. And until it's part of, it's actually part of the curriculum where they have to deliver a certain amount of time, then I think it'll continue to be like that. But, you know, we've got, I don't know, you guys got kids, but, you know, you've got chocolates and sweets and all that type of stuff. But kids aren't as active these days because they're on their iPads. So you're sort of fighting it from all areas.
Yeah. Is all your training through Premier, is that all on site in person? Or is any of that delivered remotely?
No, it's all on site. So we teach about 8,500 to 9,000 kids a week. And it's all on school site, apart from in the school holidays where we'll deliver holiday activities, basically.
How do you find the navigation of that many staff? So how many staff is that?
So we've got 50 now. It's tricky. I mean, we're dealing with younger people, and I think the work ethic and the sort of toughness of those younger people is probably not quite what it was back in the day. And I think in any business, when you're dealing with people, that's your biggest challenge. We've got a lot of good people, but when you're at that level of staff, what you find is that you're constantly recruiting people and you're constantly, you know, moving people on. And because there's a reasonable volume of it, that's consistent. You know, it's not like, oh, every 5-6 months you recruit someone. It's like you're constantly recruiting to, you know, to build your team, make them better, move people on, you know, and get rid of bad eggs, because inevitably there are bad eggs.
Did you find, what was your experience after COVID with recruitment and onboarding?
Well, we had a really solid team during COVID. So we had about 18 months. I don't know if you're asking this because you had the same experience, but we found that the market was really tough to recruit good people. And we also found that we had some retention challenges. In the last 6 months, I would say that has steadied off. There's better people out there. And the quality of the people we're getting, I think, has improved as well.
Yeah. 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 We had some experiences. But yeah, everyone I speak to, cause it was kind of the great resignation, wasn't it? And everyone realises more to life when they were sitting in the garden doing TikTok dances. So people moved around a lot more. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it's steadied out and it's kind of levered back off. And the people that should be applying for jobs with the relevant experience now are again, thankfully.
And I think I'd add to that as well that as a business, we've kind of, we've got better at what we do, and we've made sure that what we offer to our staff is better than what it was before, and also better than what our competitors do. You know, it's not perfect, but I think that's something we've learned, and we're now, you know, investing to get the best people. That's our attitude.
Well, I'd had a little look on your testimonials on LinkedIn as well. And the recurring theme seems to be that you're straight talking, no nonsense. It's nice to hear from someone that talks in that way. So working in around business coaching, how do you find the business lingo, the acronyms, the general chat?
It's painful, isn't it, at times? Because it's a bit corporate-y, and a lot of time there's always buzzwords, isn't there, that sort of come and go, and it's just doesn't have to be complex. It can be really simple. And I think, you know, over in particularly recent years, I just focus on all my work being really simple. You know, we create a business plan. That business plan is a 5 to 7, page document that if it's a good plan, you can tell, you can explain it to your mate in the pub. That's what a good business plan is.
Yeah.
And, just keeping everything simple, you know, keeping everything simple. That I think that's the key thing for, in my experience. But yeah, I'm not a fan of, you know, all the complex lingo.
Blue sky thinking.
Oh, God, makes me a little bit sick when you say that.
Okay, so finally then, what advice would you give to yourself? I mean, you're a little bit different in that you've hit the ground running as a youth, really. Because we like to ask, what kind of advice would you give yourself now, looking back? But again, even with yourself now, if someone coming into the game, wanting to kind of do what you do, property, what kind of advice would you give them from your years of experience that would kind of help them?
I think move quickly, really. I mean, the property stuff, I'd have bought more. I'd have bought more. Having said that, you're already where you're at from what you've learned in the past. I'd have with property, typically it sort of doubles every 10 to 12 years. So, you know, what I'm holding right now should be worth double in 10 years. So, you know, the more you can get done now, the longer you've got for that to appreciate. And I think I'd have just moved quicker on a lot of stuff. I think I probably hesitated around the exit from the letting agency. Possibly could have come earlier. I mean, that business is thriving. We it's my best friend that runs that. They're absolutely thriving. Just kind of move quicker on stuff, really. Don't hesitate.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. I think that pretty much sums up. I think that's a wrap.
Thanks for having us.
So, yeah, thanks ever so much for your time today. Very much appreciate it.